So on Thursday night, a few weeks ago, Dave sat down to write a letter that he knew was going to be difficult. "Dear Tony," he began, that part was easy enough. "Dear Tony," he wrote, his heart sinking as he stared at the expanse of empty white paper left on the page. "Now what do you say?" "You say it straight, that's what you do." He bent over and he began to write, "Dear Tony, I'm worried about your father." Dave stared at those six words, and then he crumpled the page, threw it in the air, caught it, and without turning to look, drifted it over his shoulder towards a wicker garbage can on the far side of the room. He twisted in his seat to see how he had done. Not even close. He sighed, retrieved the paper, came back to his chair, and began again. "Dear Tony, it's still chilly here in the mornings, but by noon, most days, spring seems to be poking gamely about. We had a female warbler at the feeder last weekend, and a cardinal's been hanging around your father's backyard for weeks." And he thought, this is ridiculous. Who cares about the weather? What do birds have to do with anything? "Dear Tony," he's writing the letter in his head now, "Dear Tony, I'm worried about your mother and father. Dear Tony, I thought I should write to you about your parents. Dear Tony, last fall after Eugene's birthday party, you asked us. Dear Tony, last fall after Eugene's birthday party, you came to our house and you asked us if we would keep an eye on your parents. It's been a long winter." Dave ran his hand through his hair and he stood up. This was like treason. He poured himself another drink. It was none of his business. No, it was his business. Tony lives in England, London, England. He's in insurance with Lloyd's. Tony's parents, Eugene and Maria, are Dave and Morley's next-door neighbors. Tony left home and moved to London well before Dave and Morley moved into the neighborhood. And until Tony's anxious visit last fall, sitting right there, right in their kitchen, no, standing over there by the kitchen door, getting right to the point, "I'm worried about my parents." Until that visit, Dave had barely met Tony. They had shaken hands over the backyard fence. They had talked briefly in the driveway, once on the sidewalk. But for all that, Dave felt he knew Tony. Because Dave has lived beside Eugene and Maria for almost 20 years. And when you're good neighbors, you know all about each other's family, regardless of where everyone lives. And Eugene and Maria are good neighbors. Eugene, the 89-year-old vegetable gardener. Maria, the 92-year-old cook. Maria, whose happiness when she is cooking for people is only surpassed by the happiness she feels when she's feeding them. It's a feeling of contentment that settles upon her like God's mercy. A feeling that arrives whenever there are hungry people sitting at her table, whenever she's carrying plates and platters back and forth across her kitchen. Maria was born with a twisted right leg so that when she walks, her right knee brushes her left knee, her legs briefly forming the letter K with every step, her body pitching from left to right as if she were on the deck of a ship. Maria and Eugene, her husband Eugene, the gardener. There isn't a square of sod left in Maria and Eugene's backyard. The whole yard has been turned for Eugene's vegetables. In the summer, this is where Maria gets everything she cooks. Fat red tomatoes and large yellow potatoes, sweet and hot peppers in every color you could imagine, yellows, reds, and greens, long skinny beans, rough chard and rapini, garlic buds the size of apples, sweet basil, pungent rosemary and mint and dandelions for salads, and soft, juicy grapes for the wine Eugene and Maria barrel and store in juice bottles and pop bottles and old vodka bottles and any bottles they can get their hands on. Rich red wine that smells like a distant field of violets, bottled and lined up in the cellar Eugene dug under the back stairs 37 years ago. The grapevine twists out of the ground by the garage as thick as Eugene's calf and winds down the back fence and over a grape arbor. This is where Eugene sits during the long summer afternoons when the sun is high and his back hurts. This is where he sits when all he has to do in the world is wait on his vegetables, tilting back on an old kitchen chair, watching the wasps dive bomb the grapes that he breaks open and rests on his knees, smoking his parodies, small, dark-leaf Toscano-style cigars that are no bigger than a pencil stub but can last Eugene for over an hour. But it's not the grapevine that holds the place of honor in Eugene's garden, not in Eugene's mind. Halfway down the yard, halfway between the garage and the back door, within easy spitting distance of his chair under the grape arbor, is Eugene's pride and joy, his fig tree. His fig tree, which is easily 30 feet high and produces real figs right in the middle of the city, figs that are soft and green and pulpy and sweet. Imagine for a moment that you're Dave. Imagine you could look out your kitchen window and watch him standing on a ladder picking fresh figs out your window. It's a miracle. Imagine standing in your backyard on a Saturday in August with a buzz of the cicada filling your head. And imagine Eugene calling you over, in Italian probably. Eugene's English is still, after 50 years, rudimentary. But if he saw you, he'd call you over. Even if he didn't know you, he'd call for sure. Because there is nothing in the world that makes Eugene happier than to have someone come into his backyard and pick a fig from his tree and eat it while it's still warm. He turned 89 years old in November. It's the fig tree that keeps him alive. Eugene's fig tree is the best-known tree in the neighborhood. Everyone knows about the tree. Everyone knows that Eugene grew it from a cutting that he brought from his father's farm in Calabria, wrapped in a piece of linen and hidden at the bottom of his trunk. And everyone knows that every October, before the first frost, Eugene digs a trench in his backyard 3 feet deep and 3 feet wide and 30 feet long. And when he's finished digging the hole, he carefully bends the branches of the tree close to the trunk and ties them in place. And then he digs around the roots until they're loose and free of the earth. And then he pushes the tree over and lowers it into the trench with ropes. The leafless, bound tree looks like a skeleton lying in the hole. The root ball looks like a giant head. Eugene, like a grieving relative, as he covers it first with planks and then with warm earth. He buries the tree. And when he's finished, except for the disturbed earth, you wouldn't know anything was there. And there is where his fig tree spends the winter, bound and buried, underground and out of sight. If he left it standing, it wouldn't survive the frost. So it winters below the frost. Until the warm April afternoon, Eugene digs it out and stands it up and cuts the branches loose. The burial and the resurrection of Eugene's fig tree have marked the seasons in Dave's neighborhood for nearly 50 years. Eugene and Maria came to Canada from Italy after the war. Eugene arriving via America, via New York City. He landed on New Year's Day in 1948, one of nine brothers. He came to find a life. He sent for Maria a year later. She landed at Pier 21 in Halifax, Christmas Eve, 1949. Eugene landed a job in a restaurant as soon as he got to Canada. By the time Maria arrived, he had a job in a mattress factory. He worked on a machine that shaped the springs, worked 11, 12 hours a day. It was hard work, but he stayed at it for 10 years. And then he went to the Rothmans Company, packing cigarettes. That was his best job. Soon they were able to buy the house. He kept working hard, but he lived for his garden. And now Eugene is 89 years old, and his legs aren't what they used to be. 3 years ago, Eugene and Maria moved into the basement for the summer. They didn't plan it like that. There was a heat wave at the end of July, and on the second night, Eugene slept in the basement bedroom because it was cooler in the basement, and Maria joined him the next night. They moved the television down the night after. There was already a kitchen down there and a bathroom with a tub. They could walk right out into the garden. They had everything they needed. They moved back upstairs for the winter. But they were both relieved the following May to move back down. They didn't need stairs in their lives anymore. So this autumn, when it was time to move upstairs, they delayed a few weeks, and when they finally went up reluctantly. Neither of them saying anything about it, however. Neither of them wanting to admit the house was too big for them. Neither of them wanting to say how heavy they felt whenever they had to climb the stairs. And then one afternoon in the middle of January, Eugene said, "It would be warmer downstairs, you know, closer to the furnace." They moved back down after dinner. Dave didn't notice anything until the middle of February. And then one night he realized he hadn't seen them for weeks. At first he thought maybe they'd gone away. And he started to watch. Every night at 9, the lights clicked off abruptly as if they were on a timer. "If they'd gone away, they would have told us," he said. And he went over to check. They didn't answer the bell. They couldn't hear it from the basement with the television on. Dave came home. He was still fretting the next night. It's not right," he said. "Something's wrong." He was worried. He had, after all, told their son that he would keep his eye on them. Tony had told him he thought they should go into a home or a senior's residence, somewhere where there were other people, somewhere where there was a staff to watch them. He called on them by the back door the next night after supper. Eugene squinted at him over his glasses. He hadn't shaved for several days. He looked alarmingly old, shuffling back to his chair. Maria said, "Are you hungry?" But she didn't get up. She didn't even try to put anything on the table. Dave worried about them all March, calling every few days, dropping in on weekends. They always seemed tired, worn out. "Dear Tony, I'm worried about your parents." He finished the letter, but he didn't mail it. For 2 weeks, it sat by the cash register at the record store. Last Saturday, when he woke up, he could tell it was going to be a glorious day. He could tell before he got out of bed by the way the sun was coming through the curtains, by the way the air felt, warm and light on his face. Suddenly, last Saturday, it was spring. He made coffee and he brought it upstairs to bed and he read the paper. Heard Sam run downstairs, heard the door slam. When he finished his coffee, he would go out too, take Arthur for a long walk. When he stepped into the backyard, he took a long lungful of air. It felt wonderful to be alive. Felt wonderful to be outside without a jacket. He looked around his yard and smiled, and then he looked next door, and he almost fell over. There was Eugene, perched at the top of his ladder, threading a rope through a pulley he'd rigged to the side of his house. He was leaning out precariously, reaching further than he should have. And there at the bottom of the ladder, holding it steady, was Dave's son, Sam. Dave's first impulse was to drop the dog's leash. "Arthur, stay," he said. He was about to jog around the fence. He was about to ask how he could help, but before he took a step, his good sense stopped him. Eugene had asked Sam to help. He could just as easily have asked Dave. He had the help he wanted. Someone who would let him be in charge. Someone who would let him climb the ladder. It took the two of them 2 hours to uncover the tree, 20 minutes to pull everything else out of the hole. There wasn't only a fig tree in there. Eugene had also buried his fuchsias, his geraniums, a passion flower, and a bougainvillea. Dave went back inside where he wouldn't be seen and stood by the kitchen window watching his son working. Watched him lifting the plants out of the grave, watched him lugging them the length of the backyard and lining them by Eugene's back door. It was like spring itself had been buried in Eugene's backyard. Like spring had been lying in that hole, waiting like a mummy under its bandages of snow for Sam to lift it out and set it down and breathe it to life. They had the tree up before noon. It came out of the ground with one fig still clinging on a high branch. They stood it up and packed earth tenderly around the root ball. If only, thought Dave as he watched, if only he could bury an olive grove. Sam was home for lunch with a $20 bill in his pocket. "I was working for Eugene," he said. Dave went over soon after to admire their work. Eugene sitting in his chair smoking. Maria coming out the door. "Are you hungry?" she asked. On Monday, Dave tore up the letter he had written to Tony. He wrote a new one on Tuesday night. "Dear Tony," he began, "there has been a cardinal in your father's backyard for several weeks, trying to convince us all it was spring. This weekend, it finally had something worth singing about. Your father and mother were in the backyard for the first time since October. It has been a long winter, and as I watched your father working, I thought, how much he has become like the fig tree that he loves so much. The winter was difficult. We haven't seen much of him since Christmas. Like his tree, he spent much of the winter underground. Last fall, you asked if the house might be too much for Maria and Eugene. An hour after you left, your father came over and said, 'My son wants me in a home and we're not going.' I didn't mention our talk. I don't think you need worry about them right now. He got the fig tree up on the weekend. He had a friend over helping him out. I can see Eugene through the window as I write this. He's sitting in the yard. He looks tired but happy." Dave paused over the next line. How do you sign a letter like this to a man you hardly know? "Sincerely," he decided. Before he signed it, he read over what he had written, and then he looked over at Eugene. He just lit one of his little cigars. He was waving madly at Maria, trying to get her attention. Maria was at the far end of the garden, working on the grapevine with a pair of pruning shears. Dave smiled and looked back at the letter in front of him. "I will go and visit them after supper," he added. "They always make me happy. I will write again soon. Love," he wrote. "Love, Dave." Thank you.